American television, viewed by millions of people around the world, has the power to influence and change the way that people think about and understand gender in American society. The lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, therefore, has criticized its limited and frequently distorted images in mainstream media. For example, gay men are often represented as overly feminine, and lesbian women as masculine. Sexuality is an emphasized feature, as both gays and lesbians are often depicted as sexually promiscuous and oversexed. These misrepresentations have fueled discriminations against members of the LGBT community for many years. The conspicuous absence of accurate representation of LGBTs on American television led MTV Networks in 2004 to launch Logo, a television network with the task of ensuring accurate representation of LGBTs in the media. Logo's programming includes shows such as Noah's Ark, Queer as Folk, and Bad Girls. In tonight's lecture, Lisa Sherman will discuss the role that Logo Channel currently plays in the mainstream media in the reconstruction of the image of LGBT Americans in the media. Lisa Sherman, an alumna of Dickinson College of Class of 1979, plays an important role in bringing LGBT issues to American television. She is the senior vice president of the Logo Channel. She is also a board member of God's Love We Deliver, a humanitarian organization for people living with HIV/AIDS and other illnesses. She was an executive committee board member for the Human Rights Campaign, and she is currently returning to Dickinson as a Metzger Conway Fellow. The Metzger Conway Program was established at Dickinson in 1982. Originally designed as a program for bringing distinguished female graduates back to the college, the program was expanded in 1987 to include both men and women of distinction. The goal of the Metzger Conway Program is to provide Dickinson students with role models and to enrich the curriculum. In order to continue further discussion about the important issue of tonight's lecture, I would like to invite you all to the Clark Forum for continuing the conversation, which will take place tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. At this time, I would like to ask that you disable all cell phones and electronic devices. Please hold all questions until the question and answer session at the end of the program. Because this event is being taped and some audience members are hearing impaired, please wait until the microphone has been brought to you before beginning to speak. And now please join me in welcoming Lisa Sherman.
Well, good evening. First, I'd like to thank Shio, who is just a delightful person who I got to know over dinner tonight. I've had a great day being back on campus for the first time in 25 years, and I'd like to give a special thank you to the folks at the Clark Forum, Jolie Rankin, Karen Fries, the folks at the Metzger Conway Program. I had a fabulous tour guide in Abbey this afternoon. I got to see a lot of new buildings on campus, which was fantastic. I have a crack technical crew here with Katie and Robert helping to sort of bring this conversation to life. And what I'd like to do is start by showing you a clip, which happens to be the very first clip that was aired the minute Logo went live on the air. So take a look.
Of liberation.
The process in the 70s was about moving out of a position of secrecy into a position of joy and openness.
What he thinks that you're can't even say it.
He's right, Arch.
Huh?
Hot tramp, I love you so.
My favorite gay moment on TV is Billy Crystal is playing Jody Dallas on Soap.
That was such an important breakthrough role.
Jody's a fruit.
And the mother comes in and says,
You wear that belted.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot.
The thing about the Anita Bryan Initiative is that we recognize that there was a we.
We must act up, fight back,
and this community. That's it. We're going to use our anger to make a difference together.
That little experience made it seem to me like maybe there's something that will come out of this.
I didn't choose this. I am this.
Suddenly, they were telling our stories in movies.
This is America. There is no them. There is only us.
By the 90s, you could win an Oscar for telling a gay story.
It's been life-saving to have this cultural visibility.
Girls who are boys, who like boys, who need girls, who do boys, who like girls, who do girls, who like boys.
I grew up uncomfortable, and I refuse to let other people grow up that uncomfortable.
You're gay, right?
Yeah, I'm gay.
Yeah, yeah, freedom!
I do think it is important that gay people be seen everywhere in all contexts.
It's about putting a real face on the issue.
And I just want to know how long I'm going to have to wait until I can see two gay men kiss on network television.
It is all the same. Love is spelled, you know, with the same four letters.
This is our journey.
These are our stories.
Welcome to Logo.
You're on.
So that is exactly what aired when we flipped the switch at 9 p.m. on June of 2005, June 30th. And, you know, Logo's an entertainment channel and the first channel specifically designed for the gay and lesbian audience. So a lot of people might have expected us to launch with gay men wearing headdresses or wearing nothing at all. And if there were any women, they may have been wrestling with each other in mud pits, or wrestling with insanity in a 1950s Hollywood mansion. I cannot tell you how many requests we had for the movie Mommy Dearest. But it was a very deliberate decision to flip the switch on Logo by acknowledging our place in television and gay history. It was truly historic, and we believed it marked a very important point in time. As you know, I graduated from Dickinson in 1979, and if you had told me back then that in 2007 I would be running a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week TV channel that aired programs and told stories about gay people, you may as well have told me that Arnold Schwarzenegger would be governor, the First Lady of Arkansas would be the leading candidate for president, Al Gore would lose the presidency but win an Oscar, an Emmy, and the Nobel Peace Prize. And San Francisco would relinquish the title of America's gayest hotspot to none other than the Minneapolis airport. And at the time, it was unfathomable, but obviously all true today. But with all kidding aside, the notion that gay TV would be emblematic of a cultural revolution is a really serious point. Let me ask you a couple of questions. How many of you have had or now have a gay friend? Okay, almost everybody. How many of you have seen a TV show or movie with gay characters? Almost everybody. And how many of you know a gay or lesbian couple? So, pretty much triple play. When I was at Dickinson in the 70s, and God help me, that was before many of you were born, my answer to all of these questions would have been no. I mean, do any of you remember when Ellen wasn't gay? Maybe a few, but not many. Well, since my years in Carlisle, much has changed in the way of visibility, acceptance, and inclusion for the LGBT community. We've seen hundreds of Fortune 500 companies adopt gay-friendly policies. Openly gay candidates elected to public offices in big cities and places like Birmingham, Alabama. Anti-discrimination laws enacted in 20 states. Marriage in Massachusetts, a totally incredible sea change. And to me, there has been one very powerful catalyst helping drive all of these changes. I believe strongly in the power of television and the media as influencer and reflector of societal attitudes that can so deeply affect us for better or for worse. And I maintain that the changes we've seen in the LGBT acceptance and inclusion have their roots in how these images have been portrayed in television over time. So we're going to take a quick trip on the Back to the Future, and we'll take a short look at how gay imagery has evolved. In the earlier years of television, gay people were never gay in name. They were instead relegated to surrogate roles, such as old maids like Miss Hathaway on the Beverly Hillbillies, or the flamboyant Paul Lynn in the center square on the classic game show Hollywood Squares, and of course The Odd Couple. Then at the height of the cultural revolution of the late 60s and 70s, gay people moved more into the periphery. So whatever gay imagery existed on television focused on sexual liberation and sensationalism that bordered on exploitation. Much like the TV show Soap, its character Jodi Dallas, yes, that's Billy Crystal over there in the corner circled in red, who played gay. However, the storyline shifted during the series, and at one point, he was ready to undergo gender reassignment so that he could live a normal life with his boyfriend. Then the storyline changed again, and he was no longer gay, but dating women, of course suggesting that his sexuality was a choice. And then in the 80s, we started to see some gay integration. Through characters very safe and conservative, the perfect sons like Stephen Carrington of Dynasty. He was clearly the poster child of the clean-cut Reagan-era Republican. In the 90s, we were carefully and gingerly, but with barely a whiff of sex or romance, positioned more on center stage, with regular characters in shows like Melrose Place, Party of Five, and of course, Will and Grace. Ultimately, the consequences of all these awkward and agonizingly overthought images come back to one place, and that place is the personal. No matter who you are, I really believe there's something very powerful about seeing images of ourselves reflected back at us from the television screen. And if you're like me, you can probably remember a few of those moments growing up. How many of you have been affected, your hearts changed, your preconceived notions rendered to just that, by an image, a character, a moment on television about gay people, or just something important to you in your own universe? Some of those moments actually inspired me and made me feel quite good about myself, and others, frankly, made me more afraid. I remember the old Mary Tyler Moore show, which I loved. Does anybody remember Mary Tyler Moore? I hope. Great. When Phyllis, the meddlesome neighbor, tries to fix her brother up with Mary. Now, much to Phyllis's chagrin, instead of hitting it off with Mary, he clicks with Phyllis's nemesis and Mary's best friend, Rhoda. Now, after several days of being forced to watch her brother hanging out with Rhoda, going to the movies and dinner, she finally confronts Rhoda, who says, "Listen, Phyllis, we're not dating. Your brother's gay." And Phyllis's response, "Oh, thank God." Gay people treated candidly and with humanity and humor in 1973. And I recall an episode of Saturday Night Live hosted by Ron Howard in the early 80s. Howard and the SNL cast performed a sketch that was a satire of the old Andy Griffith Show. Does anybody remember the Andy Griffith Show? Well, Opie returns from Vietnam. His dad, Sheriff Taylor, has passed away. And without his steady hand, the sweet, innocent town of Mayberry has been transformed into a giant red light district. Floyd the Butcher is now running the sex palace. And the Barbara Bush-like matriarch, Aunt Bee, is the madam of the brothel. And of course, we learn that Gomer Pyle is gay when he frisks Opie commenting on his hard body and invites him to the garage to see his dipstick. Now, after consulting with the ghost of Sheriff Taylor, Opie saves the day and cleans up the town, ordering Floyd back to the barbershop, sending Ampy home, and telling Gomer, get yourself back in the closet or get out of town. And the audience roared. Now think what a young woman struggling with her sexuality would think watching this. All I heard was Opie telling me to stay in the closet or get out of town as a smart, hip young audience laughed and applauded. And then a decade ago, in a national event that inspired house parties and the cover of Time magazine, Ellen acknowledged that she was gay through an airport loudspeaker. And I will tell you that I was at one of those events, and with 600 people in the room, you could hear a pin drop as she said the words, "Yep, I'm gay." I could not believe what I was watching. For me, it was a hugely emotional moment. Well, I'm happy today to say that there are more vibrant gay characters on television than ever before. Maybe you've seen Vito, the gay gangster on The Sopranos, although he did get whacked. Or Spencer and Ashley, the lesbian teens on South of Nowhere. Of course, David Fisher, the gay undertaker on 6 Feet Under. Or Mark St. James, that wonderfully flamboyant assistant on Ugly Betty. These characters are showing up more regularly and naturally, and we are now seeing gay characters of much more depth and dimension. What's important isn't whether they're good guys or bad guys, whether they're stereotypical or not, it's that they're real. So when Logo launched in the summer of 2005, our goal was to be the home base on television for the LGBT audience, a place where our stories, our history, our lives would be written by us. A place where we could actually sit in the boardroom and greenlight shows that portrayed our lives truthfully and authentically. A place where we could hand over the director's chair to artists who shared our experiences. A place where we could commission scripts to gay writers who would be in control of how we would be portrayed. And a place where gay films and documentaries that were once the domain of urban art houses and film festivals would now be available in 30 million homes. Make no mistake, we were not in reinventing this medium, we were simply reimagining it through the lens of our lives. So for example, reality shows on Logo would be about that one emotional moment and experience all gay people share. And that is the process of coming out. Take a look.
Well, you know how there's the birds and the bees? We're just going to talk about the birds.
Watch your step.
I mean, there's no easy way to say it. There's no easy way to say it. There really isn't. I really need to come out to my mom, but I honestly have no idea where to begin.
Usually when you're a teenager, you might want to ask your mom, you know, this question, but, and I think I know the answer, but I just want to ask anyway.
Go ahead.
Do you love me unconditionally? I mean, total unconditional love. I mean,
why?
Like, I'm just curious. Like, let's just say, for example, I murdered somebody and I'm going on death row. Would you still love me, though?
Stupid question.
She has absolutely no idea. Like, is she ever going to figure it out? And now that she's sick, it's like, the clock is racing now. Am I ever going to tell her? I need support. I really want to try talking to my sister at first. Problem is, she doesn't know either. It's not easy to tell someone that you love so much and that who's a big part of your family and who's such a wonderful person. By the way, I'm not part of mainstream society. I'm afraid of her opinion because I care about her.
I'm going to start to cry.
You're going to cry? Why? Then I'm going to cry if you cry. I love you.
I love you too. You make me nervous.
There's just something that I wanted to talk to you about. Because I wanted to talk to you about it for a long time.
Okay.
And it's a good thing, I think. I hope it's a good, positive thing.
Okay.
And I need your help also with something.
Anything.
Okay. I'm sorry.
In trouble?
No, I'm definitely not in trouble.
Okay.
Just hold on 1 second. Oh my God. Okay. I was just so nervous. I've been living a certain type of lifestyle that I haven't talked to you about.
Okay.
And I'm sorry for keeping it from you, and I'm hoping that you will still love me, but I'm a lesbian. And...
Good! You finally came out with it. Good for you!
Emily, I'm not kidding.
I love you. Karen, you're my sister. No matter what you do, I'm going to support. I think that's great. Good, good. Good for you. Do you feel better? Okay? Do you feel better? Why? Don't cry.
You're not disappointed
in me. What, were you nervous about that I wasn't going to accept that? I think it's wonderful for you.
Do you feel better now that you told me?
I feel so much better for two reasons. Number one, I have your acceptance.
Of course.
And number two, tomorrow I'm telling our mother.
Oh, Christ.
So, if I had seen that episode when I was 20, I am certain I would have felt much less alone and much more confident in terms of coming to terms with who I was. And just to give you another sense of some of our shows and seeing through our lens, this reality show, The U.S. of Ant, you may remember Ant from the Celebrity Fit Club. Ant dispels the notion that gay people only live in San Francisco and New York. We, in fact, live in places like Tupelo, Mississippi, and Bozeman, Montana. Take a look.
Right now on the Ant Project.
Here I am in beautiful Montana. Are there people like me here? You see mountains, trees, cattle, and streams? I see gay people. I'll show you.
I'm staying in town, and I'm looking for people like me.
Okay.
Any help?
Me personally, knowing anybody?
Nobody? How about places to hang out? Be honest. Am I standing out like a sore thumb, though, in Bozeman?
Well, you might be.
Where can I go to find other gay people today?
To tell you the truth, I only know three myself here.
Three gay people or three places?
Three gay people.
Okay, seriously. Gay population, big, small?
I don't know either. I just don't work at the Census Bureau, so I don't have an exact tally.
Okay! Dear Diary, I'm going to the EL Ranch to meet Aaron's mom, the matriarch of the family. I really gotta pull out my inner Barbara Walters on this one. Cheers.
Yes.
Lovely.
La, la, and la, and la, la.
What are your hopes for them?
They're living out my hopes. I mean, hope is a word for the future, and they're doing my dream of them right now. And that is being incredible human beings on this planet. They've got a wonderful business, and they have brought incredible guests to our ranch. Them being gay just isn't what's up for me. Them being incredibly decent human beings and talented and giving and adventuresome, that's what's up for me. and they're just great. So I'm just incredibly proud of both of them. And then the fact that their relationship has just stayed together and been so full of love all these years, it just seems amazing to me. So there you go. They're my, living my hopes.
Okay. Living your hopes, yeah. And getting me fired.
I'm supposed, and you're crying too.
Yeah, where's the Kleenex?
Okay, and you are too.
Yeah, they're pretty great guys. And they are great uncles.
Do you want them to become dads?
Of course I do. If that's what they want, that would be just so super.
You are what every gay child wants their mother to be. I don't know if anyone has ever told you that, but you are what every... No, I'm going to rephrase that. You are what everyone wants their mother to be.
So not only does this series show the power and reality of our geographic diversity, but it also tells, I think, a very important story about the one thing gay sons and daughters and really all kids want from their parents, and that is the promise of unconditional love. And for decades, gay people were the butt of the joke on TV, like the Andy Griffith parody I talked about earlier. Well, now we're telling our own jokes. Take a look at this clip. It's a scene from Rick and Steve, the happiest gay couple in all the world, an animated series satirizing gay life. What is Rick and Steve, you might ask? Think South Park meets Brokeback Mountain. Now, in this clip, Rick and Steve think that their relationship, what it needs most is a threesome. Based on what Shiloh said, this is poking fun at the promiscuity that everyone attributes to gay life.
No. Sorry.
Not my type.
I'm only into Steve.
I'm on the clock. Yes to Steve, no to Rick.
I'm not into Asians.
I'm Pacific Islander.
I'll say yes if you do something very, very, very naughty.
Guys, you gotta go. We're closed.
We'll never find anyone.
It's my fault for being Asian.
It's morning already?
We spent 9 hours dancing to techno music and looking for sex? We are such gay men.
I thought we were hot. Oh, God. Are we trolls already?
Maybe next time, boys. Laters.
See? They aren't so picture-perfect.
Love can be so lonely when there's just two of us only. All we need is someone to hold. We want to be like him and him and him. Or her and her and her. Just like him and her and him. Or her and him and her, you see. Or will you and I end up just two, not three?
Rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub.
The Trinity, the holy threesome of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Rosa?
It takes three to make a triangle. Three to make the number three. Three to make, 69.
Not really.
But it's fun to try. We wanna be like him and him and him. Or her and her and her. Just like him and her and him. Or her and him and her, you see. Or will I and you end up just two, not three?
What can I say? Just so you know, last year we showed that at our budget presentation at MTV Networks and took a big risk and it was a huge hit. Here is a short that gently pokes fun at the alleged disconnect between the world of L'Oreal and the world of lesbians.
The practically true, almost factual, sort of accurate chronicles of gay history.
Virginia, 1850.
Lumberjack Peggy Milford receives the first flannel shirt on record from friend Sarah Whitley. In return, Peggy cuts off the top and sides of her hair to make a wig for Sarah.
Party.
The mullet and flannel look sweeps the hinterlands and remains chic in certain circles today. Fascinating, isn't it?
So Logo, in addition to all of this, has gay short films, gay news from CBS, music videos featuring up-and-coming gay artists, all from our point of view. Now, just as we launched Logo, the media universe literally turned upside down and inside out. Absolutely everything changed. Think about this. When I was growing up, there were a handful of channels on television, CBS, NBC, PBS, and maybe my local station in Philly. Then in the 90s, the digital revolution began, and I remember getting digital for the first time with literally hundreds of channels, which is what made Logo TV even possible. Then with high-speed internet, we have millions of sources of entertainment, and we're still trying to figure out the incredible power of this online technology. How many of you watch more video on the internet than on television? Well, Bill Gates says that everyone will watch television over the internet and only the internet within 5 years. How many of you actually sit through commercials when you're watching TV or when you DVR a show? Well, experts in my industry wonder aloud whether the 30-second commercial will even continue to exist. And how many of you have Facebook or MySpace pages? Well, this kind of online community building is truly considered the future of entertainment. But regardless of how quickly things are changing, there is one thing that remains the same, and that is content is king. It's just the monarchy is collapsing. And for gay people, that has been the most astounding breakthrough. Today, there are more storytelling platforms with hundreds of channels hungry for content. And the internet, gay people are finally telling our own stories, and we are in control of how we are portrayed. Even the Leave Britney Alone guy, this guy Chris Crocker, Britney's super fan. Have any of you seen that video? It's crazy. His video posted on YouTube has been streamed more than 12 million times. But through the power of the internet, he's in control. And I might add, getting lots of attention with appearances on late night shows and TV development deals. Jimmy Kimmel said, when talking about Crocker's video, one of the great things about the internet is that you can now share your nervous breakdown with the entire world. This medium is creating new stars like Tila Tequila and Perez Hilton, who are crossing over into TV. Regardless of what you think about them, these folks are becoming celebrities. Now, Joshua Gamson, the author of a book called Claims to Fame, Celebrity in Contemporary America, calls this a shift from top-down manufactured celebrity to a kind of lateral, hyper-democratic celebrity. Thanks to the constantly morphing digital world, we have the ability to create and distribute content as mass media truly becomes a democracy. Now, I will tell you that the very creation of Logo as a 24/7 gay media entity is simply not enough. Logo is first and foremost a business, and we need to prove ourselves as equal and legitimate with the one thing no one can argue with, and that is the profit and loss statement. Because the truth is, in America, money, unfortunately, remains the ultimate validator. And with financial success, we will be saying that the gay and lesbian community is legitimate, it's a lucrative market worthy of being chased, and a vital part of the American entertainment mosaic. I remember the story in the New York Times 2 days after the Ellen coming out episode aired. Because the coming out story for Ellen's ABC sitcom on Wednesday night was well known in advance, perhaps the only real surprise was the lineup of advertisers during the show. Most notable was the dearth of fast food, beverage, and car advertisements, which usually fill prime time. The truth is, they had all stayed away. When Logo first launched as the first ever avenue for advertisers to reach this audience, Logo's ad sales team and I worked day and night to try and line up clients. Even just a few years ago, advertising during gay programming was considered a daring move for companies who were afraid of tripping the switch on the right-wing activist network. We launched with three very courageous and committed charter advertisers, and I am proud to say today that Logo has over 100 national advertising partners in every major category. And last year, 65% of those advertisers that we brought on had never spent a dime to reach the gay market. So hopefully we're actually growing the size of the gay advertising pie. We're also lucky enough to have the opportunity to build bridges with our advertising partners, helping them to create advertising and messaging that will speak directly to gays and lesbians. And in doing so, just like in our programming, we are telling real stories about real people in truthful, authentic, and meaningful ways. It's what we call engagement, the ability for an advertiser to connect with a viewer, to draw them in, and to build a bond. Take a look at how Subaru is engaging Logo viewers.
When you're in a position where you're on your last leg, or you're freezing, or you think you can't take another step, you really have to kind of be in touch with your own feelings, because your body will do whatever your mind tells it to. It's incredible how far you can take yourself.
That's really joy to me, is getting out of the city, you know, away from just the chaos. I mean, that's real.
Do I think I'm getting too old for this? Yeah, I definitely think I'm getting too old for this.
I don't think I'm ever too old to do anything.
For crying out loud, I'm 50 years old.
I think the human body is beautiful as it is. I think it's a beautiful thing that it does age. It's natural, and it's the way it's supposed to be. I think when we're sitting on the bed together at the end, I say it's been a great time.
Everybody cries at some point. Men cry, women cry. Just walking over that finish line, that's probably the most joy you could ever imagine.
And now let's look at a Levi's ad that aired on other cable channels and broadcast networks. Now check out the version that Levi's created for Logo. Ads seem risque or out there to you guys? I mean, they seem pretty tame, right? Well, I spent years in the advertising world, and I can tell you that the executives in advertising who guide their clients, the advertisers, they are a very conservative bunch. So we're not only breaking ground by bringing them to the table to advertise to this audience for the first time, but I'm happy to say that we've helped to broaden their imaginations about gays and lesbians, and in some small way help them change their hearts and minds. And now they're creating gay imagery and in turn broadening the imagination of the public. And it all sounds very circular, but in fact it is. I truly believe it's what's helping to bring about an authentic and true image of gay people in America. Now, another sign of arrival in mainstream culture is when you are the subject of gentle, broad satire. When straight people can laugh with us, without making us the butt of the joke. Well, early this year, Logo had just launched a few new podcasts, and Stephen Colbert clearly had something to say about it.
Tonight, the president gives his State of the Union address. The Democratic Congress ought to be appreciative. They owe their jobs to him. And the Gay and Lesbian Network Logo launches podcasts. Soon your iPods are going to want to marry your BlackBerry. Stay tuned for 22 minutes of highlights from tonight's show. This is the Colbert Report. Threat number three, gay podcasts. The cable network Logo has announced plans to launch its own line of podcasts with content tailored toward its gay and lesbian audience. Just take a look at these alluring titles. Here and Now, She Said What? And Talking to Manatees. You don't have to be gay to want to talk to a manatee. They are old and wise and have many stories of the sea. I say gay podcasts should be clearly marked with gay names like Gay Talk, This Week in Gay, or Gay Cooking Tips with Oscar Wilde, Gertrude Stein, and Sir Ian McKellen. Logo, I don't need your podcast joining the army of products trying to turn me gay. I have hard enough time with brawny paper towels.
But perhaps the show I am proudest of was an event that we held this summer. We invited all of the presidential candidates to participate in a forum on gay issues. The Republicans declined, but six of the eight Democrats accepted our invitation to this historic event. And for the very first time, presidential candidates were talking about gay issues to a gay audience on gay television. And I will tell you, it was truly historic. And it represented everything we'd been working towards, using the power of the television to create community, visibility, and credibility for a group of Americans that for so many years were invisible to TV creators, advertisers, and politicians. Here's how it felt to be there.
Please welcome Senator Barack Obama, Senator John Edwards, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, Congressman Kucinich, former Senator Mike Rubell, Governor Richardson.
I have heard that you feel uncomfortable around gay people. Are you okay right now?
When you're a black guy named Barack Obama, you know what it's like to be on the outside.
I am your girl. Absolutely.
I do not support same-sex marriage.
Well, I prefer to think of it as being very positive about civil unions.
I am pushing to expand domestic partnership. It's the same thing.
Just playing it safe. You're
not going to lose any votes over not being for marriage. I don't care. I don't want those votes.
People who love each other must have the opportunity to be able to express that.
If there's anything we need in this world, it's more love.
Gay and lesbian, LGBT, transgender.
If I'm elected president, I would get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
End discrimination in the employment area.
We need to allow gay and lesbian couples to adopt children.
We need to have condom distribution to deal with the scourge of AIDS.
Finally get hate crimes through.
It's justice, it's human rights.
I want to thank, first of all, HRC and Logo. I think it is a historic moment.
You have to step forward, and I'll be happy to step forward with you.
And you're going to change this country.
We can help lift up the whole nation in so many ways.
We can be partners in trying to make our country a little bit better and a little more progressive for all of us.
It was really quite something, I'll tell you. Now, I've spoken a lot about imagery, but the message here today isn't just about how much progress we've made, but about how that progress was made. It came from people who challenged the status quo and used evolving technology to advance the truth. Past generations were at the mercy of a handful of media kingmakers, and today we are only at the mercy of our own imaginations. You know, America is often called an experiment. Well, we have a laboratory in democracy and freedom of expression unlike any generation before us or any nation on earth. We are connected like never before with more business and creative opportunities than we've ever had. The question is, can we continue to use technology to make our communities more relevant, more mobilized, more proudly assertive, really more powerful than ever before? And I would encourage you to use the tools at your fingertips, the millions of platforms, the billions of gigabytes that give you a national stage to take action on what matters to you. By letting people know us and the things we care about, we have the power to cause positive reverberations in the lives of people we may never know. Please help tell the stories and challenge the ones we're being told, whether it's the war in Iraq, the genocide in Darfur, the environmental crisis, or discrimination of all kinds. We have the power. And so I'd like to end with a quote from a speech from Robert Kennedy that he gave in 1966. And his words are as true today as they were over 40 years ago. Few of us will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events. And in total, all of those acts will be written in the history of this generation. It's from the numberless diverse acts of courage and belief that human history is shaped. Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lots of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. So thank you very much for having me here tonight. It's enough about me. I'd really just love to hear from you now. Any questions? I don't believe it.
Lisa, could you talk a little bit about maybe some of the future programming that might be occurring at Logo and what sorts of issues you might be taking on in the future?
What sorts of what? I'm sorry.
Programming.
We've got a great slate of programming already lined up for next year. If you're familiar with Noah's Ark, which is the first scripted series we did about four African-American gay friends, we're actually we're creating Noah's Ark the movie, our first theatrical release, which will probably be shot in November and released in the theaters early next year. We have a reality show called Rock Dogs, which follows a group of gay basketball players in San Francisco who actually won the gold medal at the Gay Games, and they're trying to actually break into sort of the farm team for the NBA. So we're actually very excited about that. I don't know if you've heard of the short movie called Sordid Lives. We're creating a series out of that. We've got a great documentary coming out about being gay and Islamic, which is really quite powerful, and a couple of big movies that are on the slate for next year. Plus, we'll probably pick up Rick and Steve again, the Big Gay Sketch Show, which was our first foray into sketch comedy. Rosie O'Donnell's the executive producer of that show. Actually, the final night of shooting is tonight in New York, and we've got a lot of special guests this year. It's really sharp and very funny.
Things you didn't touch on exactly in detail were the short films that are often shown. That's one of my favorite parts,
great.
Actually. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that as well as the international influence, because I know a lot of those are non-American made.
Right. Well, thank you. We have gone out and acquired tons of gay short films, and we have created a series of gay short film festivals, if you will, on the channel. You know, the truth of the matter is that Logo has provided really a first-ever platform for gay artists to show their work. And this work has been out there for a long time. But there's never been any place for it to be seen other than in the urban art houses or perhaps in the gay film festivals. And so we are literally out there scouring every film festival trying to acquire as much of these short films as possible. And if you go online, you can actually see it at Logo Online, but it is one of the most popular destinations on our site because there's just some great stuff out there, and it's fantastic to have the chance to actually put it on the air. You can vote on it online, and then what you vote on, the top 10 gets shown on the channel. Internationally, we're out. You know, people are, now that they know that there's a place for their stuff to hopefully be seen, we're being presented with lots of films from people all over the world who want to get their stuff presented to, you know, Logo viewers. Yes. Well, I'm happy to say that we are well-financed by a very successful company, which is MTV Networks, owned by Viacom. Just a little bit about MTV Networks. I know I mentioned this to a couple of you earlier when we were chatting. MTV launched 25 years ago, really because there was a small group of fairly radical people who felt like no one was talking to the youth in our country in a voice that really they could relate to. And they had this crazy idea that if you put music videos on TV, that people would actually watch them. And little did they know that they basically created a cultural phenomenon. And the people that did that then went on to say, okay, well, no one's speaking to our kids, and so we're going to do Nickelodeon. And no one's really speaking authentically to people who love country music, and so we're going to create country music television. And this company has really made an art form of speaking authentically to niche audiences in a language that is truly authentic and understood. And so there's no other media business that I could ever imagine would launch the first gay channel. And frankly, they were so proud to launch Logo because it's so much part of their DNA and who they are. And so, you know, we submitted a business plan in a very traditional way, and they know what it takes to finance a venture like this. And so far, I'm happy to report that we've hit every goal we've set for ourselves. We're in 30 million homes. We've got over 100 advertisers, and we're right on that plan. And so I feel like there's a lot of we're sort of the favorite child at the moment, and I like that spot very much.
Does it work?
Oh, okay, cool. sorry. So I know that MTV is a parent company, then, of Logo.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously MTV has done a lot in the last, like, 10 years of putting homosexuals in the spotlight more, sort of giving them sort of more exposure to the public eye in sort of socially acceptable ways. But why is it that MTV, in a lot of their shows, sort of does perpetuate these myths of sexual promiscuity and overly sort of feminine characteristics in gay men, and then doesn't do anything on their own channel and instead creates like a sub-channel to deal with those issues instead of actually changing their real programming?
First of all, there's a guy that I work for. His name is Brian Graydon, and he is a programming genius. He found the South Park guys many years ago, and when he came to MTV 10 years ago, he made the decision that he was now in control of what was going to be on the air, and so as a gay man, he decided that he was going to be sure that he started to include gay characters authentically. So, you know, Pedro Zamora in the real world way back when was really the first authentic character, a young guy living with AIDS who ultimately passed away. And Brian has since included many, many gay characters, and MTV has been pretty good about that. If you're talking about some of the horrible programming that is on MTV that exploits pretty much everybody, you know, we talked about that at lunch today. I can't defend the content that they're putting on the air in all cases. I will tell you that, unfortunately, that's what sells. I mean, that's what people watch. And that's what brings advertisers to the channel. And that's what allows us to make money so that we can start channels like Logo. It's what allows us to do amazing PSA campaigns that, you know, MTV has been known for forever. You know, they've really raised the visibility on the crisis in Darfur. They've been talking about AIDS and hate crimes for many, many years. And so, you know, I don't like that stuff. I cannot defend it, but I will tell you that as part of a whole sort of portfolio of what they do, it's the stuff that pays the bills.
I actually have a somewhat related question,
okay.
And I sort of want to start with a couple of disclaimers, one of which is that I am critically sympathetic with what you're doing, and the other of which is I've never spent 10 seconds watching Logo TV. I may have been the only person in the room who raised her hand watching 30-second commercials. Having said that, I want to ask you a couple of questions that I actually sort of think are really difficult, one of which is how the network balances what you're calling sort of representations of real lives with market demands and the way that it selects its programming, because it does seem fairly clear to me that some gay lives are more marketable than other gay lives. Relatedly, I can't remember what my second one was. Hang on. What did I say? Relatedly, I want to sort of understand how you think about the ways that what you're calling real gay lives become sort of incorporated into a marketing machine. I'm particularly curious about sort of the Subaru ad in which quote-unquote real gay lives become what is being marketed and mm-hmm. being consumed through the purchase of a Subaru.
Mm-hmm.
So could you maybe talk about
sure.
both of those?
Well, the good news about Logo is that we're not yet a rated network. So we don't get tracked as far as who's watching or how many people are watching, which I will tell you gives us a lot more creative freedom to pretty much put on whatever we want. And so we will make creative choices and have made creative choices not so much to capture the most eyeballs, which sort of takes you down some paths that you might not want to go. From the very beginning of the channel, we were very clear that, you know, the challenge we had before us is how do you program a channel that reflects the diversity of LGBTQ? When, in many cases, the only common thread we might have is LGBTQ, and we're all very different people. And so our programming choices so far have been to sort of show a variety of different parts of gay life that we know are out there but have not ever been seen in that way. So, as I said to some folks earlier, we have tons of documentaries that might talk about or show gay rodeo or gay soccer players or teens with, you know, gay moms being parents, you know, being Jewish and gay, you know, the issues that we all as individuals deal with in our own lives. So I'm actually pretty proud of the programming choices we've made and feel like we've been true to what we said we wanted to do from the beginning, which was to try and reflect that diversity. You know, our first scripted series, which for a young channel, most channels don't have scripted series, and we were able to, you know, make a couple, was Noah's Ark, you know, African-American gay men. Those stories, those faces aren't seen very often, and so we were very happy and proud for that to be our first. We just launched a series called X's and O's, which is about four lesbian friends. So, you know, we're trying to cover the landscape, and it's a pretty broad landscape. As far as marketability is concerned, you know, when we were talking to Subaru about how they wanted to portray themselves on the channel, I mean, Subaru is now, they were our first advertiser, one of the three brave ones, and now they're our largest advertiser. We wanted to do something that felt true to what their brand was and that felt something that would resonate with our audience. And so basically, we said, why don't we profile gay people who have Subarus? And so what you saw was a profile of one couple. We have four altogether. And it's really their story. And to us, that felt like a fairly clean, clear, authentic way to meld the marketing and the content with the audience. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the way we thought about it.
I'm wondering if you're going to or have you done anything in support of the transgendered community as part of your support of the LGBT community?
Yes, it's a great question, and we've done a fair amount. We developed a show called Transgeneration. You may have seen it or know about it, in conjunction with the Sundance Channel. And it follows six college kids who are going through transition from beginning to end. And it's just a fantastic piece of work that aired last year. We also aired a show called Beautiful Daughters, which took Eve Ensler's vagina monologues and actually did it from a transgender point of view. And Jane Fonda was involved with that project and felt very strongly about how we did that. So all of the readers from the vagina monologues and all of the stories were from a transgender point of view. And we have a couple shows currently in development. We've also done some shows that are sort of on the gender fluid, in sort of the gender fluid area. We have a show called Gender Rebel, which I think talks a lot about that issue of people who really self-identify as women, identify very male or male as very female. But so we're trying to tell all of those stories, and I think that the transgendered stories are just incredible. If you haven't seen them, you should check them out on the website. Anybody else? Yeah.
I'm curious about the response to the Republican candidates not wanting to show up, and I'm just curious if there's been any backlash, you know, perhaps apart from Stephen Colbert's ribbing, that it seems like this is something that definitely you're speaking to a population, but I'm wondering what the challenges, if any, have been, and if there have been any negative consequences, any risks, any vocal opposition, and if there's had to be any work, even in your programming, in addressing violence or hatred or, you know, real sincere political and public opposition to LGBT community members.
Generally, as a channel, I was saying at dinner that, you know, when we first launched, we were very nervous about what would happen when we flipped the switch. And for the first 6 months, I literally would get up every day and think, today's the day the Scud missile's going to land, and we're going to get, you know, all kinds of mail and people protesting out front. But I'm happy to say that that never happened. We had a couple of advertisers early on that somehow the word got out that they were advertising on Logo, and a bunch of emails were sent to the CEO of that company. But we had worked with our advertisers very closely and sort of warned them about the possibilities. And so, to their credit, they hung in there. And, you know, I think without really reacting to the onslaught of emails, the emails stopped. So I'm happy to say that, you know, that's really the extent of the backlash we've gotten. You know, you get an occasional nasty email, but, you know, every channel gets those. So I'm actually quite pleased about that. And, you know, the offer to the Republican candidate still stands. I mean, if they want to show up, we will have a forum. But, you know, I don't see that happening.
You talked about the advent of the internet and how that's going to revolutionize the way we look at video. Wondered if you wanted to go more in depth of how Logo is going to deal with that.
Well, you know, Logo currently is in 30 million cable homes. And the tier of cable that we're on really only allows us to be in about maximum 45 million. So we're getting close to the cap. There are 80 million to 100 million televisions homes in the United States. So basically, 60% of the country will never be able to watch this channel on television. So the internet ultimately becomes that place for us. That will give us the national footprint that will allow people to watch our channel. And I believe that over the next couple of years, you will be able literally to duplicate the channel on the internet. Today, we put as much of our content out there as possible so you can watch a show at a time, but it doesn't feel like your television. And then, of course, we've acquired a couple of sites around niche communities. We acquired a site called After Ellen, which is a lesbian entertainment site, and After Elton, which is a gay male entertainment site. We've acquired a social network called Downlink. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a fantastic social community that really is mostly African-American, Hispanic, and Asian gay men and women. And so we've built out our web properties because we really want to, you know, be the destination online on the for entertainment for gays and lesbians. So we're doing all kinds of things. We're also putting our content out on iTunes and VOD, so we just want as many people to have it when they want it, where they want it, how they want it. Thank you.
On behalf of the Clark Forum and the Department of Psychology, I would like to present Lisa Sherman with this plaque as a token of our appreciation for your visit. Welcome back to Dickinson, and thank you for your lovely presentation.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for coming. Have a good evening.